Blog Talk Radio.
There we go. Let's try that again. Thanks, Mike. Somehow, some reason, my phone muted on its own today. It wasn't me that muted it. Actually, something bumped up against this by why it muted. So, shout out to all again. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Racing with Big Sweat. I'm going to skip all the other stuff that I said the first time around and go ahead and get your hosts on here tonight. Chris, whoops, Chris, how you doing tonight? All right, what's up? This Chris?
Yeah, man.
Okay. How you doing tonight?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Loud and clear there, buddy. Glad to be on another night of Racing with Big Sweat. Another night to talk about short track and NASCAR racing, whatever the race fans want to talk about here tonight. And glad to have the support of 110 Nation Sports and all the colleagues that help get that show on the road there. You know, it's just a privilege to be able to be in the captain's seat, and of course I'm going to share it here with Mr. CJ Sports. CJ, what you got going on for the rest of the week now?
This weekend I ain't got nothing really going on. I'm going to catch the race in Texas on the newly repaved Texas Motor Speedway. 2 weeks, I'll be making a trip to the Bristol Motor Speedway to cover the Xfinity Series race, and that's really all my plans for this weekend. I have an off-the-wall question. It's race-related, but an off-the-wall question. When I was watching Race Hub earlier, which Race Hub, I don't know, I'm really never ever happy with Race Hub. I don't know what it is about that show. They have some great guests on there, the host and just the layout of the show. I just never really cared for it. But I was watching it, and I caught a little bit of it before I turned it earlier. And I noticed this before, but it's kind of always irked me off. I guess it irked me off. I don't like it. And I see it more and more now, paying attention more and more. It kind of gets underneath my skin. I don't know if it's a pet peeve of mine or not. But what we talked about, they had Bobby Labonte on earlier tonight. And when they were showing his stats on the TV screen, they said in Monster Cup 1990, whatever years he was in. Is it wrong of me to have an issue with them referring to what is now the Monster Cup to back then? To me, like if they would talk about Dale Sr., they would say Monster Cup from 19 whatever to 2000 whatever. I have an issue with that. If it was the Winston Cup when that person was in, then he raced in the Winston Cup from 19 blah, blah, blah to whenever. If he ran in the Sprint Cup, then he was in the Sprint Cup. I don't care what it's called now. I know I'm sounding petty
right
now.
I feel that NASCAR's already moved in this direction because they understand the identity problem. Cup racing should be considered cup racing. If it's not within the time frame of Monster Energy, then I agree definitely with you. Why are we giving them sponsor credentials to something that they were not sponsoring at the time? Just because the Firecracker 500 is now something else doesn't mean that we still call it I guess what I'm trying to say is when you have the truck series, you have an identity. You kind of have an identity with trucks, but what is the real identity of the Nationwide series or the Xfinity series or the Busch series? I think Cup has kind of grabbed their identity, and that's the name of it this year. You know, Monster Cup, NASCAR Cup.
I just don't like that they use the term that what it's called now for those drivers that rode in the Winston Cup. For all those fans that are listening or watching the show, or you know, is part of that conversation, they know if they're referring to Dale Waltrip's career. And they write with the cup, it says Grover Winston Cup career, or Winston Cup career, 13 years, whatever. You know, whatever the case may be, the fans are going to understand that. But them labeling Monster Cup and from this year or this many years in the Monster Cup, Dale Walsh never ran in the Monster Cup. That's like saying now, because we call it the Coca-Cola 600, it used to be what, the World 600 back in the day? That'd be like saying that was the winner of the Coca-Cola 600 In 1984, no one, it was not called
exactly.
Coca-Cola 600 back then.
I
just don't like, I like it to be
and,
called
and remember,
what it
before
was.
It was Winston, it was called the Grand National Series. So,
yeah.
You know, if that isn't a co-conflict with where the Busch Series is, you know, basically, I believe that if we were to call anything the Grand National Series now, it should be the you know, the what we would call the Xfinity Series now. So I believe that this is going to fix itself. And us as reporters and journalists, you know, I myself would not refer to Dale Earnhardt's time as being, you know, Monster Cup Energy or Monster Energy Cup or, you know, even back in the 70s. And for some reason, it's just in the time of naming the series, you know, Winston Cup, they it's only to that time because they don't refer to the 70s as the Monster Cup Series or, you know, the Monster Energy Cup. So, you know, I see where you're going with that, Mr. CJ Sports, and I definitely can agree with you totally. That one kind of grinds my gears.
I don't know. It's just like a pet peeve of mine. It's like the NFL. They don't refer to the players that played back in the old AFL days as NFL players. They refer to them as ball leagues. And so I just never understood why NASCAR doesn't keep it separated like Dale Sr. ran when it was the Winston Cup. And Jeff Gordon, you know, he could be labeled across three different ones, so it just really don't matter. But I look at it as if you drove in the Winston Cup, whenever they pop your name up on the screen and whenever you go in Google them, it should say Winston Cup driver, blah, 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 or Nextel
right.
Cup driver or Sprint Cup driver. Not it all say he spent 20 years in the Monster Cup because we've only had 1 year of the Monster Cup. And like,
right.
I know it sounds petty, and it probably doesn't mean nothing to most of the fans that are listening to the show tonight, but it is something I saw earlier today, and it just kind of, I don't know, I just don't like it.
Well, you know, and we're back from the day when Shea Stadium was Shea Stadium. When, you know, Fulton County Stadium was Fulton County Stadium. You know, we're from those, you know, Candlestick Park, you know. Then all of a sudden they got different names. And so, you know, basically this is a problem with, you know, with the new age and the problem with technology and the problem with advertisement is, you know, I don't understand how they're going to call the new Atlanta Stadium for the Falcons Mercedes Stadium because – aren't they the name of the dome over in New Orleans? I mean, you know, so it's kind of like I feel exactly where you're going. And us as the media, if we're not getting paid to say their name, then why are we saying their name?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're kind of giving them free advertisement there and for accomplishments that they, had, like you said, had nothing to do with. So I agree with that, CJ.
And I understand what you're saying, but that part doesn't even bother me that they're getting the free advertising. To me, it bothers me because it's not labeled correctly. And so, if you're a new fan and you see, oh, well, this says that he has a 13-year Monster Cup, you know, career, okay, and I'm new to the sport and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I've heard all this hype about this is Monster's first year. How is he a 13-year vet in the Monster Cup series if this is the first year of Monster being part of the sport? Like, I'm sorry, but I'm a statistician, and anybody listens to any of my shows knows that I am very good with numbers, that I've always been great with numbers. Stats mean a lot to me, and that I have ran fantasy leagues back for 20-something years now, back to when I was 16 years old, with a typewriter going to the library and making copies. There was no emails and all this other stuff. So when I see stats, I want stats to be as accurate as possible. So, you know, if Jeff Gordon drove in the Winston Cup Series, the Nextel Series, the Sprint Cup Series, and the Monster Cup, well, he didn't do the Monster Cup Series so far anyway. I'm not sure he's completely done. Then the back of his trading card, it should say Winston Cup, Winston Cup, Winston Cup, Winston Cup, Nextel Cup, Sprint Cup, Sprint Cup, Sprint Cup. And when it says at the bottom, it should not say 20-year veteran of Monster Cup. It should say 20-year driver of the NASCAR.
And this is where I disagree with you. I don't see any need in giving those sponsorships any credit. I mean, They were there. They offered their money to the sport, no doubt they helped it grow. But in the end, isn't it just the Cup Series? I mean, isn't the Truck Series the Truck Series? I mean, I get your point, but I definitely
agree with you.
Kind of the same thing. But to me, it's like, why does it matter? It's the Cup Series. You know, Cale Yarbrough and Bobby Allison fought out there in the Cup Series. You know, Jeff Gordon and Clint Bowyer went at it in the Cup Series. But I agree with you. See the problem with is with the nationwide Xfinity Busch Series because it's had so many different names that has no identity.
Well, one, I agree with you. I would be saying if they feel that they got to have a label, then it needs to be the years that he was in the Winston Cup, it should say, and the years that he was in the Nextel, and the year, if there's got to be a label. But I agree with you. I'm fine with just saying the Cup Series, not be it. You know, 20 years in the Cup Series. Now, how many years or how many different titles? Because I know that we have the Grand National, the Winston Cup, the Nextel, Sprint Cup, and now Monster. She's looking at about five. I only knew about three on the Xfinity Series. How many other names does the Xfinity Series have?
Well, you know, I remember it for years being Busch, and then I think it went to Nationwide, and now it's Xfinity. Before that, I would like to, if anybody knows the name of the Busch Series before, because it's always been the Junior Series, but it's also, it would be interesting to know what the name was back when it was the Grand National Series, and maybe they call it the Sportsman Series or something. It seems like that's about right. If anybody can check in with that and anybody listening and give us a confirmation, maybe Paracone's listening. He'll get that one for us. But, you know, you got an interesting point there. And you know, I mean, right now I feel like what we're bringing to the table is an identity crisis that's worse than the Las Vegas Raiders right now. Because, I mean, you know, you take Las Vegas or you take the Raiders or you take somebody like the – What are the Angels called now in Major League Baseball? Because when I was growing up, they were the California Angels. Then they become the Anaheim Angels. Now I think they're the Los Angeles Angels.
Like the Raiders. We're not going to talk about, you know, God, I can picture his face. Thank God it.
Marcus.
He was running back for the Oakland Raiders.
The one
God.
Who.
Bo Jackson's, was it Marcus Allen?
Marcus Allen, that's right.
To answer your question, though, because I did look that up, Budweiser Late Model Sportsman Series from 82 to 83, Busch Grand National Series from 84 to 2003, Busch Series from 2004 to 2007.
So it was considered the Sportsman Series, and I think that's maybe what we need to go back to with terminology for the Nationwide Series, because that's a really good terminology for the lower series stock car, you know, a Sportsman Series. But I feel like you do. I just think that it needs some kind of identity because, like I said, with trucks you can relate to and say, okay, well, the Truck Series over the last 20 years – and then you can say the Cup Series. But until we find this middle ground for what the Xfinity Series should be called, other than the Xfinity Series, you know, I think that NASCAR's kind of messed up there and not allowed Xfinity to have its own identity. I love where this is going, though. I really do, because this is, you know, this is once again, you know, something that we're collecting on and we're realizing, and it's an identity crisis, and it's the same kind of crisis. Like you said, you're not going to sit there and say, you know, the Las Vegas – oh, yeah, Marcus Allen played for the Las Vegas Raiders. No, you're going to say he played for Oakland in L.A. You know, you're going to give the credit where credit's due.
Most definitely. And, I'm not a – I don't know. It's just one of those things. I was just looking at it, and I've seen it over the years. I seen it last year I see it when it was still the Sprint Cup Series, and they were talking to somebody. And it showed their stats and it said Sprint Cup Series driver from this year to that year, whatever it was, and I forget who it even was. And then I saw it today, and I was like, you know what? I don't know, something about that I just don't like. But anyway,
I agree.
What would you want to jump into tonight?
Into the stage racing, CJ. Because I think an interesting thing happened at Martinsville, something that we were kind of not ready for. You know, over the last couple of years, we've noticed that the the certain caution pit stops and people kind of pumping their brakes to make sure that they're on the inside and not the outside, because obviously starting on the outside at a place like Martinsville is not a good place to start at. I remember in the days where they used to line up the lap cars in front of the starting positions, and basically, you know, old school racing was they started on the left side of the track and the lap down car started on the right side. You know, as racing's evolved and we've gone to this side-by-side start, this is, you know, something that may need to be looked into, but my thing really was on the stage racing and the definite excitement that was stirred through the two segments before the end of the race. What did you feel about the Chase Elliott deal with getting around Kyle Busch there? Do you think that that's going to hurt Kyle Busch in the end?
I misunderstood the question.
On the stage racing where Chase Elliott was able to get around Kyle there at the second stage for the second stage win. Obviously, Kyle's been trying to get a stage win and hasn't gotten one yet. And unfortunately, he got into a little position there with a mess up, and Chase Elliott was able to get around him for that stage win. Does it really matter? Are we putting too much emphasis in the stage racing, or is it really just something that's right there and we're wanting to enjoy it at the track, but it really doesn't give us much material to work with?
First of all, it wasn't a mistake. Ricky Stenhouse moved him out of the way. There was no mistake on that. But it's important because now some of these drivers can afford to have a bad race.
But you said it's a mistake, but I feel like he could have let Ricky go because obviously Ricky was trying to get his lap back before the end of the segment. And generally what happens is that's gentleman's racing and Kyle would have let him go. I understand at Martinsville, but I feel like Kyle made the mistake by not letting Ricky by.
Well, now you got me to say three things. The gentleman's thing, I don't even want to hear that. After listening to the basketball players out there wanting to fight each other because someone does a layup with 3 seconds left, I don't want to hear about gentlemen. They're out there to get every position. You don't know who at the end of the year is going to be at Homestead that you're going to be in your final four. We all know Ricky Stenhouse is not going to be, but you never know. He said in his interview that he was going to let him by, that was his plan, and he was working on letting him by that turn. Stenhouse just got impatient. What gets me about it is that was turn three and turn four. They were coming around to get the checker flag for the end of that stage. There was really no point of Stenhouse moving Kyle Busch out of the way because Kyle Busch was not passing anybody else from turn three and four to that flag stand. So Ricky Stenhouse could have stayed one lap down, pitted, got his lucky pass, and been in the exact same position for the most part anyway. So him doing that and causing a disruption and causing people, Kyle Busch, really to me was a stupid move because you were about to give it a close back on the lead lap anyway because you got the lucky double.
Right. Okay. Well, now that's interesting, and I like your point there, Jason. You're right on the money. My question is: was Trevor Bayne maybe an issue in that? Was there another Roush car that was that could have taken the lucky dog? Because your facts are exactly right, and I didn't take that in consideration. So, well done on your homework.
I'm not sure who the next person in front of him was, but me,
I know them
personally,
two have been running together a lot, so, you know, if that would be the only way you could let him off the hook with the facts that you just brought to the table, because I agree, if you've already got that position, then it may sound more like retaliation, and it may be more into Martinsville Blues than it actually is just a racing incident where, you know, I'm quick to put the blame on Kyle Busch, but obviously the point you made there is very viable. I mean, I dig what you just said.
To me, even if it was my teammate, my mentality, knowing Kyle Busch, knowing he's putting people like Ron Hornaday into the wall intentionally in the Truck Series race, my mentality, I don't care if my teammate is going to get the lucky dog, if I get around him or not, I would rather not have to have beef with someone like Kyle Busch and go ahead and get the lucky pass versus causing a disruption, having to have to deal with Kyle Busch the rest of the year to help out my teammate who's not going to win the race anyway.
Yeah. Good point. Good point. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about Roush Fenway, who has like an average starting and finish position of 21st at Martinsville. They've never had a good team at Martinsville. I heard Darrell Waltrip, you know, hit on that, the fact that, you know, Chevy has always had a good response time and Ford has lacked there. But obviously after this weekend and seeing last weekend and seeing Brad Keselowski put the old school whooping on them, obviously there's a little bit more in those Ford tanks this year than what's been in the past.
Now, just to answer your question,
that's not
earlier,
taking away from Joey Logano almost winning the race twice already, but you know, it is a reason why Ford hasn't won that event since 2002.
Now, did you go back to your point earlier? Yes, the stage wins are important. We're asking these drivers to have 10 perfect races at the end of the season so they can win a championship. You can't afford a DNF. Now this makes it where you don't necessarily have to be perfect. That race at Talladega where we watched Kevin Harvick manipulate the end of it, now that isn't such a big deal if you have those championship points for winning these stages. That someone like Harvick dictating how the race comes out and who wins the race, now you can have one of those races. So the championship points for winning those stages to me are big, because races like Talladega that are wild card and issues that you just can't control, motors blowing up and different malfunctions that you can't control, now you don't necessarily have to be perfect to finish in the top 15, 20. Luckily, the last couple of years, that's how it worked. Most of these cup guys very rarely in those last 10 races, it's almost like it's staged, because most of those drivers finish up front. And there's a reason why they're in the chase or the playoffs now. There's a reason why, because if anybody ever pays attention, when you get to the playoffs, those that are in the playoffs are usually the ones that qualify up front and the ones that usually finish up front.
I found that to be odd too, CJ, over the years, how coincidental it is that these three drivers seem to be right there with each other all the way through the playoffs. And, you know, what you said is exactly right. Some of these guys, you know, the Kevin Harvicks and the whatnots, you know, it's like, you know, you turn the TV set on and just by happenstance now they're first, second, and third. I don't know if the cream rises to the top or if this is a performance issue or, you know, you just really have there's only a certain amount that you can get out of this race car, and these teams are basically putting all their efforts into those chase cars, and that's why they're all running up front. You know, I do believe that extra technology is used and debuted during those times. I do believe that some were tested beforehand to make sure that it would either get by tech or was actually going to increase performance. So I do believe that all threads are used once chase time comes around. But it is kind of awkward how these guys can run together. You know, basically, this week they can finish, one can finish first, the other finishes 10th and 14th and 21st. But as soon as it gets down to crunch time and playoff time, these guys are 1, 2, 3, 4. And like I said, I don't know if that's for a performance thing or if it's a gentleman's racing, and I know you don't want to hear that. And that's, you know, when we say chase, it does open up what my next subject's going to be. And I know this one's going to grind your gears, because how did you feel about Chase Elliott winning the Martinsville race? I know it had to have bothered you.
And years prior, I didn't care that the Cup Series guys were in the Truck Series race and in the Xfinity Series race. Then watching the chase play out last year, I showed my displeasure of the fact that you're taking away from these Xfinity Series guys being able to win races in each round and in advance into the next round. And NASCAR said, you know what, we agree with, you know, what basically what I was saying, and we're not going to allow them be in the chase next year. Great, I'm glad you did that. And it even restricted how many races they could be in. But now that NASCAR has continued to go in another direction, nobody's complaining. Everybody loves the stage racing. Everybody loves how this is playing out so far. Now you got to make that modification again, because there's nothing worse than watching the top five spots in each stage ending be Cup Series guys, and the first person that gets a point in the race is sixth place, and they don't get an automatic playoff point. They don't get the stage points that they deserve. No, I'm not one, and it's been brought up a few times. No, I don't feel that Elliott Sadler. No, if Elliott Sadler's the first Xfinity finishing car in sixth place, no, I don't feel he deserves to get the 10 points and to get the playoff point. I feel you're only pointed for where you actually finish. But now that NASCAR has gone in this direction, now what they need to do is they need to eliminate the Cup Series guys. I think the only exception is if you want to allow the transition. I know right now it's if you competed in
and it should be cut down to 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. 2 or 3 years at max. I like the 2-year limit. That way you're eliminating, you're given an opportunity to help these guys transition into being in the Cup Series. But it also eliminates all these points that these guys out there need and could use to go towards them getting into the playoffs and carry them through the playoffs. That would eliminate them losing it all. So Chase winning the race, yes, that irked me off because that made it where Johnny Sauter did get the points. And I know that every driver is out there to win races, but you want to talk about teamwork and how things should have played out, what should have happened is Chase Elliott should have went ahead and lit up. He doesn't need that win.
Exactly.
He is perfectly secured in his ride in that 24 car. He's doing a phenomenal job.
Go ahead and finish.
He's doing a phenomenal job over there in that 24 car, and it's the only car in Hendrick Motorsports even doing good this year up to this point. So he doesn't need that win in the Truck Series. Johnny Sauter, he could use those ten points for winning that stage. Well, actually, the 40 points for winning the race period. He could use those 5 championship points to carry him through. If we're going to talk about teammates, that's the time the teammates should have came into effect.
Great point, and I'm going to tell you, I've been on an island with this issue because I understand the developmental process in some of these kids, and you really should have different, you know, a Truck Series driver and a Nationwide Series driver shouldn't be included in this. In other words, if you got a Truck Series driver that's going to Nationwide, he shouldn't have to follow the same rules as Cup, because when you get the Cup, you are the top dog. And my problem has only consisted here of recently, like you said, since the change of the rules. Of course, I didn't want to see Kyle Busch come in and dominate every race like we've seen. And I didn't want to see Carl Edwards doing it. But I remember the time of Mark Martin and Harry Gantt and how those guys always ran the Nationwide Series or the Busch Series of late. And you know, I mean, it's just been kind of a thing with the Junior Series. But, like you said, now that we've gone in this new playoff system, it has started to irk me more. And what irked me the most was watching the aggressiveness that Chase Elliott was racing with, as if he had to move this person right now because he was the best on the track and needed to be in front. And let me tell you something. Chase has nothing to prove in a truck. He needs to get out there and win in the Cup Series. So exactly what you just said, what would have been great to see was Chase accept the fact that he's a Cup driver and has made it to the top level, to give that to the teammate. And I don't want him to give it to him. So if we're talking about giving somebody something, the best thing for them to do is not be allowed to race in the series at all. And there's going to be disagreements with that. But you know, when you have these guys and you don't know why was Chase racing there, was he being paid by GM, by the race team to race? You know, was it just to get experience for Martinsville? You know, what was the tie-in and the connection to that? And you know, I know that he raced there last year with them. And Martinsville is one of those tracks where in the Nationwide Series, they don't race at Martinsville. So, you know, basically you get the experience of truck, and then you go to Cup. But for some reason, even with Chase, it irked me the way that he felt like he had to win that race. And he was willing to push people out who didn't have – He's sitting there getting in a motorhome, and these guys are renting hotel rooms and sleeping at the track. You know what I mean? He's bumping guys out of the way that dig every weekend. And to me, I feel like the sport has come to the point to where the victory lane checks need to be written to those drivers who support the series, not bought-in drivers.
You said something, and I did have a question. Oh, and I forgot what the question was. You said something, and I said, why do they... the Xfinity Series. Why doesn't the Xfinity Series? Why does the Truck Series go and not the Xfinity Series? As you're trying to prepare these Cup guys to be in the Cup Series, you think the Xfinity Series would definitely go to Martinsville.
Yeah, maybe because of how close-quartered the track is. That's a question that I cannot physically sit here and answer. I can only speculate that maybe the reason is the pit stalls, just that's one of the tracks where the Truck Series goes and races twice a year. I'm not sure why that one is exactly left off of the Xfinity schedule, but as we talk about Xfinity and Truck, you know, it would be great to see them race at that event because short track racing is definitely more popular in the lower series than some of these mile-and-a-half speedways.
I just never understood why that there's a Truck Series running there and not the Xfinity Series. To me, it'd make more sense. I think this is one of those tougher tracks, the way that track played out with the paperclip. And... you know, the Truck Series, the odds are you're going to have to go through the Xfinity Series before you get a ride in the Cup Series. So, I mean, to me, it only makes sense that at least one of the times that the Cup guys go to every track, the Xfinity Series at least goes one of the times. They're going to have some other different tracks on top of that just to get that experience as they're making that transition into the Cup Series.
Right. I agree. That's something that I guess we would have to hammer NASCAR about and find out, you know, what the dealio is, because it would be nice to see, and I would like to know when the last time competition was there with the what I want to call the Sportsman Series and what everybody else calls the Xfinity Series. It would be interesting to know when the last time that they did race there. Typically back in the older day, this was the difference in the Xfinity Series of now and of the past. You know, we used to have tracks like the Milwaukee Mile, the track in Memphis, Nashville, the track in St. Louis, and also the track at ORP in Indianapolis. So, you know, these were great small venues, and NASCAR kind of pulled the Xfinity cars and put them more as the sister series or the junior series to where the Cup guys were. And I can understand if logistic issues were to play in this, but you know, definitely as the sport is trying to gather, as the sport's trying to gain new recognition and a new face to the franchise, I think these are issues that are going to have to be looked into. All in all, though, I am impressed with the way the season has gone so far. I think that Kyle Larson has been a good story topic. He's been good for the headlines. Chip Ganassi's had a few statements made about, you know, his extracurricular activities, and I think that, you know, Kyle's response in that has been pretty professional, and I think that Kyle is really realizing now that he's, you know, he has the chance to be the next superstar in Cup racing. I wanted to get your take on that.
I think it's crazy that for the prior 4 weeks, when he had the 3 second places and he had the first place, Kyle Larson and Chip Ganassi was the talk of the day. And every topic and everything that came through social media was about either Kyle Larson or Chip Ganassi racing. Then JB Mack has a tire go down early in the race, and Kyle Larson's car just didn't have it, and he barely finished in the top 15. And I've not seen anything all week about Kyle Larson or Chip Ganassi.
Yeah, I definitely think that Jamie McMurray's issues kind of, you know, gave a flat tire to the rest of the organization, and you know, it seemed kind of like a normal Jamie McMurray incident there. You know, maybe this wasn't one of their tracks, and Martinsville is definitely one of those tracks where you can miss it for sure. But it is a chase track, and that could be important leading down into the final race of the season, especially the way Talladega's being played out this year, being run 2 weeks early.
I tell you what, I think the chase is going to be different this year because every other year, the drivers, once they won that first race of the year, they used the first time they went to these tracks as a way to test for their return to the track during the chase. Now this year, with the points being different and those extra points meaning so much, we're not going to have drivers testing and basically trying to set their car up for the return to those tracks in the chase. And I think that's going to make the chase be a little bit different this year as well.
Okay. Well, we've gotten some information now to go back to the Martinsville issue. It's been 2006 was the last and only NASCAR Busch Series stock car race held at Martinsville, Virginia. But it is being speculated that they will be one of the first races the Busch Series will make its return and debut under the lights at Martinsville. So fact check there real quick. And, man, I tell you what, that's some exciting news that I'm going to lead into my next subject. What the hell has happened to jski.com? I mean, for the real people out there that are listening, we know those are diehard race fans. Most of you know of jski.com. Most of you have gone there to get all your press releases for NASCAR over the last 10 or 15 years. Guys, I can't find anything on this ESPN site. Who's with me?
What dot com now?
Jski. You never heard of Jski?
I don't think I've ever been on
there
before.
Wow, guys. Oh, man. I hope you don't get hammered too hard for that one. Jski was a site.
Stay off jski.com, Chris.
Huh?
She said stay off Jski. She said that sounds like a porn site, Jski.
Jski.com. No, it's not a porn site, I promise you. It was a great press release site for NASCAR material. It's been around for 10 years. And now it actually connects you to an ESPN link. ESPN bought it about 10 years ago. The site's been around for 15, 20 years. A guy was, you know, really ahead of his game when he made the site. But the thing about the site is it stayed as it was for so long. Now that it's integrated into the ESPN system, you have the breaking news topics and you basically can't find anything else. As a diehard news guru, definitely Jski was a lot easier place to go and find the local rumor mill. It was actually called the Silly Season site because back in the old days, Silly Season started as early as May in NASCAR. Now contracts are tied up, so you don't really know anything until the end of the season. But back in the old day, and you know we all know this, Dale Earnhardt made his announcement the week of the All-Star race, that he would be leaving DEI and headed to Hendrick. So times have definitely changed. But this is one of those websites that has to have lost a lot of views and travel pings, I guess is the word I'm trying to say. Yeah, there it is. Thanks to Mike Perricone for sending us that link there. But it's, you know, it's changed, and I hate that you don't know much about Jski. I wish I had shared that with you earlier so that you would have a subject for it. But definitely times are changing, and it's hard to keep up with the news, the deep news. You know, you can always find out what a superstar is doing, but at jski.com you were able to find out what the next star was doing or what was going on in the truck series or what was going on in the Xfinity series, everything from TriStar Motors to to, you know, the next truck team that was going to come aboard.
Well, see, you put me on this site, and I learned something new. Tommy Baldwin Racing will be back at Texas. J.J. Yaley will be driving the Tommy Baldwin machine at Texas. I learned something new. Glad to see that Tommy Baldwin Racing will be back in one of the top three series this next weekend.
Yes, yes, sir. That's a good deal. And they're going to have the famous number 7 there. And that's a good thing for Tommy Baldwin Racing. And I guess the last subject that we'll hit on is the lack of full field in the main series. Is this going to get any better when we have 38 cars showing up for a race when we can field 40? I mean, is it to the point to where owners are saying it's not worth bringing another car?
I will be 100, and I got one other topic that I want to throw in there. And I forget what it is. I just check it to that thing. I thought about it. But I would rather them only have 35 cars out there and have very competitive, no park and start deals, and have 35 cars that legitimately are going to try to compete versus having 40 cars and one or two of them have no business being out there. I honestly don't have a problem and don't think it's an issue with there only being 39, 38 cars out there. Yes, I would like to see a full 40-car field, but if I'm getting 39 of the best situations out there versus 39 plus one that's going to start and park once they run through the first fuel cycle, I would rather just have 39.
And I'm the one that's going to have to disagree with you, because if we're not setting full fields, then what the heck are we qualifying for? We should just go out there and let them draw. And if Jimmy Johnson is fastest in practice but draws the 36 number, well, guess what? He starts at the back of the field. I think that that's a better racing for the fans. Instead of watching the leaders chase the leaders all day long, make the leaders work for their position. If we're not going to field a full field of cars, then we need to do something different. Because part of qualifying was a race in itself, and that was a race to make the race.
Why can't some of the races, they mix it up and have a drawing where the field can be inverted, or every so race, so many races, well, I guess you can't do every so many races they invert it, because then people would eventually not do well. So I agree. I think, hey, let's spice things up. You know, every fourth race, you know, there's a drawing or a coin flip, and if it stays, the field stays as is, tails, the field gets inverted. Let's mix things up and make those that are the fastest prove that they're the best and go through the field. I don't know.
And here's another great stat. I would like to know exactly what the percentage is for a race that was called for rain, you know, a practice or a qualifying that was called for rain, and they started by owner points, what the percentage of the top five winning that race is. Because we know at a place like Martinsville, where they rained out, Junior had a 21st starting spot. Well, it's almost impossible to win a race from the 21st starting spot at Martinsville. It seems to be, you know, a time where, you know, if you don't go on your last practice speed, I just don't agree with the owner points, because basically what you're doing is you're setting the field to follow the leader. And, you know, if we're in the entertainment business, let's see some entertainment. I love the All-Star event where they inverted the field. I think that was the, you know, you want to see the best of these drivers, you don't start them on the pole every time, Mr. CJ, what you do is you start them on the, you give them a penalty, make them come back from the rear. That's what earns race fans. You're telling me that Dale Earnhardt didn't earn race fans when he come from three laps down at Charlotte to win? You're telling me that when he was three laps down at Bristol and come back to win, that didn't earn race fans? Man, that's racing. That's what it's about.
Okay. Another thing that I think is winning race fans. Gives me a little more respect. I would like to see more drivers do it. I wish he didn't wait. I think they said 19 years since he last jumped into one of these cars. But Kevin Harvick, this year in July, will be jumping into a K&N series car at Sonoma and getting out there with them guys. We talked a little bit about that last night with Mark Rett from Rett Jones Racing over on the 110 Nation Sports Show. Actually, Kevin Harvick had jumped into one of his cars a few years back, or at some point, I forget, at what point, but this is the first time that he has done it in many, many years, and I like that. I
Wait a minute. You just threw me for a fool. I mean, we just argued about cup drivers taking other rides. And now in the K&N and in the Wheeling Series, it's okay. I don't understand this.
because it's a one-time deal, and it's different. To me, it's different. It's like LeBron James going back to his high school and playing a game out there with his high school kids.
But you're going to have to tie one leg behind his back with the other arm just to give the kids a fighting chance, and that's the same thing we're doing in this series.
I understand, but just think how excited those young drivers in that K&N series to be out there with Kevin Harvick.
Do you think those drivers are excited to be out there for Kevin Harvick? They're like, damn, they're with our chance to win.
But just think of the drivers that beat Kevin Harvick. If anybody is able to actually beat Kevin Harvick out there.
Very true. In order to be the best, you have to beat the best. Great mentality there, CJ Sports. Great mentality. In order to be the best, you have to beat the best.
Now, the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series is a little bit different because now you're talking more of college and a transition in between the college and the professional world. So it's a little bit different. To me, going back to the K&N series.
So let me throw a scenario out there for you real quick. We've got 36, okay, so you want 35 top drivers, okay, to race in the Cup Series. Now, what if NASCAR were to say, okay, you top 35 drivers, y'all are the best in the series, you get to pick one race between the other two series a year to run. And it just by happen chance that a Cup driver picks every race except for a race where, in other words, they all pick their own race. And so you've got, 70 races to choose from, 35 drivers. Are you okay with them doing a one and done and a win? So are you kind of okay with that?
I probably wouldn't have a problem if we only had one Cup regular and all the other series combined, or even the other two series, because the likelihood of even Danica going back to the Xfinity Series and winning or dominated is still slim to none. You got only your 5 to 8 drivers that, yes, when they go to the Xfinity Series or the Truck Series, they dominate. The rest of them, it's not going to be the same issue. So if I knew that each of them only got to partake in one event in the lower two series and there can only be one entry per race, and they had to, they all had to sit there and call dibs or whatever on what track they're going to go to. I don't think I would have a problem with that. Yes,
that would kind of give a main event. Don't you feel like the boxing atmosphere on something like that? Like I noticed this weekend, and sorry guys, I have allergies and my throat's messed up, but yeah, bear with me. I noticed this weekend that Logano was being the character portrayed for Texas Motor Speedway. It's the happy Logano this weekend, and so it's kind of like I could see where track promoters could really tune in that, hey, this is the weekend Dale Jr. races Texas Motor Speedway. Dale Jr. versus the field for the Xfinity Series or versus the field for this weekend's truck race. I could kind of see a true definite build-up on something like that, like an anticipation. Who's going to beat the Cup driver this weekend?
I'm sorry, what was that again?
Who's going to beat the Cup driver this weekend? And since these guys could pick it beforehand, of course this is all by theory, but if a driver could pick at the beginning of the year what race he was going to run that wasn't a Cup race, then a promoter at Texas or at Indianapolis or at New Hampshire could actually sell
so
the race as...
Who would it be this weekend of the Cup regulars?
Say it was Logano's weekend to race the Xfinity Series.
No.
Well, you've got Logano versus the Xfinity kids. Who's going to win,
I would, if I had to pick what driver would be this weekend, if I was the driver and I was calling dibs on this weekend, I think it would be Jimmy Johnson. Just because he's won that race so many times, now with the repave, I would want an opportunity to be that only Cup guy to get out there one day ahead of everybody and experience what the Texas Motor Speedway is like on the new repave so he can continue dominating the race. So I think if Jimmy Johnson, if this rule was in play and Jimmy Johnson had his choice, I think it would be this weekend is the track he would pick.
So the build-up and the anticipation on this, if Jimmy Johnson, by, you know, theory, of course, that Jimmy Johnson would pick this as his event to race the Nationwide Series, then what it would be is the Nationwide Series guys were fixing to, you know, go to battle with a seven-time Cup champion. And I could really see the anticipation, the build-up being used for a strategic promotional. In other words, use these guys for what they are, promotional items, and sell tickets, because this is the weekend that this driver is going to be facing the young guns, you know. And I mean, it's been years since Jimmy Johnson's raced a Nationwide race. So, you know, when you're talking about caliber racers, you know, Tony Stewart occasionally got off in a Daytona race in Xfinity, or, you know, very rarely did he go race one of the dual tracks, you know, like the Chicagoland or anything like that. You know, most of the time it was a prestigious race that Tony would run if he would run Nationwide. So, you know, I could see this already being interacted with the top guys, but we've always had like the Carl Edwards and the Kyle Busches who tend to run a lot of Xfinity races and a lot of truck races, and of course they're the dominant factor.
Now I got a question for you. I just thought about this out of the it just the sky opened up, and this question just fell out of the sky. Tony Stewart visited Wynot or Haiti, Hattiesburg, one of the few weeks back, right?
Yes.
And everybody was excited, right?
Of course.
And everybody wanted to see Tony Stewart out there, right?
Of course.
A Cup regular racing with the guys that don't have as much money in the lower series, right?
Right.
Nobody had a problem with that, right?
No, not at all. And the track owners love it.
So when you question me about the K&N series, really there's no difference, because we kind of feel the same way about it. But my K&N series question kind of got questioned. But you were just as happy to see him show up at your local track.
That's only because I'm trying to find you, not correlating with what you believe in. And really the argument was, how can you like it in one and not the other? Because you made a great point. It's just not being handled right. And that's the issue. There's a certain way that you can fit these guys into these races, and it worked for everybody. But for these guys to come in every weekend and steal the top purse money from the guys from these teams that are working their tail off to support the series, it's not fair to them. And as long as, Carl Edwards or I guess Kyle Larson can run an Xfinity car, he's going to, because he wants the experience and the money to win. You know, I mean, it is, they're racing for money, and that's something that we don't need to forget. So money is an issue with these guys. And my deal is, if you take that top purse money from those support series cars, how do you expect the support series to support the big series when you continuously have Cup drivers winning in those rides? Because the way it works at short tracks is, if you have a big-name driver, most of the time there's a check written out to that big-name driver to be there. When you're talking about former Cup drivers, Tony Stewart, he's not one of them, but there are several out there that expect to get paid before they even get to the track.
I'm not big on the Xfinity Series being guys being out there. They dominate the race. I understand why NASCAR has allowed it in the past to help put bodies in the seats. But speaking of seat, I'm going to finish this point there real quick, and I want to get to this next point before we run out of time. I understand that it helps put bodies in the seat and they get 2 days to be on that track. I understand, though. I'm just not a big fan of it. But talk about bodies in the seat. It seems that NASCAR has finally hit on something that is popular with the majority of the fans. I think that there is a Band-Aid on the bleeding. I think the TV ratings and the attendance I've probably hit the lowest it's going to hit. I don't think we're going to see an instant bounce back, but I think this is the lowest it's going to get. I think we're going to finally start trending in the right direction, because I think NASCAR has hit on. But it leaves me with one question. Why is NASCAR refusing to lower the price of tickets? Instead, they would rather have half the grandstands empty, or they would like to remove grandstands that they've already paid for. I mean, it's already been paid for. Why are you pulling them back out? Wouldn't it make more sense, instead of charging 100 people $100. Wouldn't it make more sense to charge 1,000 people only $10? You get the same amount of people or same amount of money, but now you've got 1,000 people spending money and on merchandise, programs, parking, vendors, and everything else, and it looks better on national TV and makes people, hey, you know, they're selling out. Well, let's go check this out. Instead, it just seems like they're content of only selling 100 tickets versus 1,000 tickets just so they can get full price. And I'm sorry, but I would rather make $5 on a seat that I've already paid for versus getting nothing from the air that is taking that spot because I'm refusing to lower the price. NASCAR needs to really, really evaluate, look, this is what we normally make in ticket sales. Let's go ahead and reduce. So this is how many seats we normally sell, and this is how much we normally make. Now, what we need to do is take that number that we normally make, divide it by the total amount of seats we got, and then we need to come up with a ticket price. That way, if we sell out, we don't take a hit in the ticket, you know, that part is at the pot, and now we got more people at the track, and now it's more affordable for everybody to be there, spend money on all this other stuff, so we actually make more money in the long run.
Well, I'm going to blow your mind. We just today purchased our yearly package to go to Talladega. I bought 9 tickets, CJ Sports, 9 tickets. Give me a quick guess of what you think I paid for those 9 tickets for a Saturday and Sunday 2-day event pass for 9 tickets.
All the kids above 12?
No, 3 of them below.
Tickets. I'm probably going to be on the low ballpark figure, but 9 tickets, 2 days, I'm going to say at least $750.
Half of that.
Oh, wow.
Now, you just put out there $700,
more.
And that's what we would typically think. But there's promotional ads that these tracks are doing, giving you tickets for basically nothing. I got 2 2-day passes. 9 2-day passes at $50 a piece, plus the kids are a little bit discounted. So, you know, that's $25 a race for an Xfinity race and $25 for a cup race. You can't go to a short track these days and get that kind of pricing. So what it is what I believe the theory here is they've run their locals off. No longer are locals participating in these main event tracks. So basically, where you've spent a lot of time marketing to make sure that you have people traveling to the racetrack, you don't have local people giving out tickets, enough giveaways in the surrounding within 2-hour drive of these places in order to really get the full effect. Now, we're talking about Talladega, who generally comes close to selling out every year. Now, I've been for the last almost 10 years, and most of the time the place is at almost full capacity. I do believe back in 2014 was the worst year at Talladega, and that was when they really realized that we didn't need the back stretch and the front stretch, and so they took out the Allison grandstands. Big mistake by my idea, but now that I see where they were going with it, it really worked out. Because Talladega had spent a lot of money on the front stretch and redoing the seats, and they had pavilions, they had tarps over brand new seats that weren't even being sold yet. Now, without those Allison grandstands, those seats are actually being sold to fans. So, you know, but if you think that you can't afford to go to these events, call the Ticketmaster or call the track and find out what these prices are, because first of all, NASCAR is very generous in military discounts. They have great packages. And, of course, you know, when you're ordering your tickets, they're trying to sell you the insurance. They're trying to sell you the camping package. They're trying to sell you the pit passes because, you know, they want to make their money. But you can still go to some of these events for fairly cheap. Now, at Bristol's a problem because they don't have free camping. And to go to Bristol, you got to rent a hotel room for 3 days at $900. And so by the time you make an investment to go to Bristol, you know, you spent the kid's first semester college fund just to go. And that's a lot to ask for a middle-class and failing economy situation with economics right now. A lot of people don't have the expendable money that they've had in the past.
Well, I got to thank SFI and NASCAR because Shorty and myself, 2 weeks from this weekend, we'll be at the Bristol Motor Speedway for the Xfinity Series race at zero cost.
Deal is exactly what you said, though. If you have not sold every ticket at your track by race day, then give the chance to sell that extra slushie. Give the chance to sell that extra souvenir program. Fill those seats with $5 tickets. You know, hey, you can't sit next to her. You got to get wherever you can because these seats have already been sold. But then what that does is it creates a hysteria. Well, if I got to wait to the last minute to get my $5 ticket, then I'm going to do that. And then you're really killing the sales throughout the year. One thing about, like, with the Talladega package, you can pay on it all year long, and you can make your experience whatever you want it to be. So I think, I think that really what NASCAR needs to do is become more family-oriented, and I believe that they're moving in that direction, and you'll see the pickup again of fans returning back to these tracks. One thing about these major stadiums being built all over the United States, they're adding something else to the stadium to make it a full-time 24/7 event. And they want people to come to that stadium to either eat at the restaurant or to buy at the merchandise place. In other words, these stadiums are no longer closed to the public 6 months out of the year. And I think that NASCAR is really going to have to figure out a way to integrate their stadiums, their tracks, to be more accommodating to the everyday person. On the last take on this, who do you have this weekend, Mr. CJ Sports?
Yeah, it's going to be tough with the repave and seeing who's going to adjust quicker than everybody else. I'm going to go with Jimmy Johnson, though. He's won, four in a row until last year. So he's won, four of the last five, three of the last four, something like that. The winningest active driver right now, I like Jimmy Johnson, so I'm going to go with Jimmy Johnson.
Man, I'll go with Denny Hamlin this weekend. Hamlin knows how to get around Texas. JGR is performing at a top level. I think that they're ready to cash in and get a win. So I expect that number 11 FedEx machine, Denny Hamlin, to be up front. I really think that Denny's going to have a great run. My sleeper pick is going to be A.J. Allmendinger. I like the way that the TRG team is really bouncing on all gears, and the team really looks solid with, since adding the second team. It's definitely a lot more information coming into that 47 and 37 organization.
Definitely. I was definitely surprised to see both of them up there a few different weeks this year so far. We was kind of wondering how Chris Buescher was going to do in a team that was a little bit better. Not that JTG is a lot better than Front Row, but it is a step up in the right direction when it comes
JTG,
to quality
I'm
of
sorry.
Team.
I think I said TG, didn't I? Did I not? My good TG Shepherd team. Oh, my goodness gracious. Boy, that just showed my age, didn't it?
But as we get things wrapped up, I've got to make sure, because I didn't get to do this earlier because I was on muted, so I fell on my phone, and usually it takes a finger to mute, and it didn't. I didn't touch my phone. I know that something else did. But I got to thank Fit for Life. I got to thank Paige Stockdale of It Works, I-95 Sports Network, Mile High Radio. Don't forget, you guys can catch all our shows right here on the Blog Talk Radio over at blogtalkradio.com. Also, you can catch it on Spreaker over at Spreaker.com. If you've not followed us on Spreaker, go over there and follow us. We're only about 40 follows away from getting the paperwork rolling on being on iHeartRadio. And it's something that I would really like to see for the whole network in 2017. We're also on Satchel, Stitcher, iTunes. You can catch us on the I-95 Sports Network and Mile High Radio Network as well. So we're continuing to expand and get out there. You can check us out on Twitter at 110 Nation. Find us on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports, and check out our site, www.110nationsports.com. Tomorrow night, right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, we got Benny B. I'm going to go with Vinny B. I'm not even jacked his last name up. And his dad and crew chief, Andrew, along with Matt Galco, who who are SK Modified Driver at Stafford Springs. So we got a good guest lined up for Hot Laps with Staff tomorrow night at 8 o'clock right here on the What's In Nation Sports Radio Network. So make sure you guys tune in. And I want to make sure that I thank everybody for tuning in tonight. And I got to thank Chris for allowing me to be part of a part of the show and be part of this continuance of us tribute, giving tribute to Steve Billmeyer.
Yeah, definitely. And I appreciate you kind of being there, because nobody wants to hear me getting off on my rants and going by. I've done radio shows by myself, and you know, it's easy to set a negative tone and not even realize it a lot of times when you are listening to yourself talking. I mean, we watch sports shows all day long, CJ. We know, you know, you watch Colin Cowherd, and, you know, he's a Westbrook hater.
Oh, yeah.
And he, you know, he has people coming on the show now accusing him of being a Westbrook hater. No, he's just giving you an in-depth, you know, opinion from somebody who studied basketball for a long time. And so it's real easy to kind of set things off in a negative motion when you're doing it by yourself. So, you know, just having you along here and being able to talk about racing, it's a great thing. And we always want to make sure racing's being brought to in a positive light. And we also want you to support your local tracks. Support your local short tracks. Be out this weekend. Why Not Motorsports Park? We're doing a 2-for-1, $15 grandstand admission. It's going to be a great thing. We're doing a Battle of the States remake and also the nightly event. So you get your money's worth if you come on out to the House of Hook, Why Not Motorsports Park, out in Meridian, Mississippi, this weekend. Be there. And Mr. CJ Sports, thank you for being here. And if you don't have any more announcements to go out, then we'll call it a night there, boss man.
Well, let's call it a night. Let's call it Thursday night.
Yeah, definitely. And see y'all again, same bad time, same bad place, next Thursday night.
Yes, sir.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.